free ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From the beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back, NBL Pocket Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and become a patron if you really like the show. And if you're already a patron, I just want to thank you very much for your patience this year. We haven't uploaded a heck of a lot of episodes, but your contribution is still much appreciated. Now, this episode is a bit of a look forward and a little bit of a look backward. We're looking at the semifinals upcoming, but we're also looking back at the season that was, but we're doing... And in the realm of that, we're looking at the over-under predictions we did at the start of the year, any award gripes, a recap on some of the things that stood out that people aren't discussing about NBL 26. Then we're looking at championship odds, semifinal predictions and premonitions, both semifinal 1 and 2. And then we're doing something that's going to be a little bit forecasting again. It's going to be a little bit longer, hoping to bring this episode under 25 minutes or 30 minutes, but we're doing a look ahead to NBL 27 for the eliminated teams in reverse ladder order. So if you're a Brisbane Bullets fan or a Breakers fan or a Illawarra Hawks fan, there's something for you in this one before all attention turns to the four teams that are much better than your own. And then we're going to open the mailbag and then we're out of here. Okay. Let's start with this. Over-under predictions at the start of the year. PointsBet. Big thank you to PointsBet for their over-under or win totals predictions that you could bet at the start of the year. I went 7 of 10 correct. New Zealand I got wrong. They were 14.5. That was their marker, and I took the over, and they only won 13. SEM were at 15.5. I took the under. They won 22 games, so I was way off there. And Tasmania were, their marker was 16.5, and I took the over, and they only won 14 games. Bit of a disappointing year for them. So I was a little unlucky with some of those, but underestimating Southeast Melbourne was a major mistake. And thank you to PointsBet for those. At the time, I could rationalize all those picks. Looking back now, I liked New Zealand. I didn't think their coach... I didn't think New Zealand were going to lose four games to Brisbane, both at home and away. Or maybe they lost three. Can't remember. I think it was three. Didn't anticipate that happening. And then Tasmania, all those injuries, didn't see that coming. But Southeast Melbourne, I underestimated Nathan Sobey, Josh King, and probably John Brown as well. And they proved me really, really wrong. They look great. Moving on. Awards gripes. This is a bit of an old topic, so I won't linger on it terribly, but... The only real award gripe I thought was McGee, and I think it's legitimate. I think he should have been in the NBL second team, and it should have been Cheatham who should have come out. I thought both had good years. I thought McGee had a better year. It didn't translate to success, but then again, McGee plays with Tyler Harvey and Dave O'Hickey, and Zylan Cheatham plays with the greatest player in the Southern Hemisphere. So that does help. Moving on, NBL 26 recap. We're looking at things that stood out that perhaps aren't being discussed as much. And we've discussed it on the pod before, but I'm not sure about the Ignite Cup with its low attendances and lack of TV interest. Was it a success? I kind of lean on the members of the clubs here to tell me whether they thought it was an intrusion or a bit of a... I think it left a bit of a sour taste in people's mouths that they, again, had to pay extra on top of their membership fees for those games. It felt slightly underhanded, and in its first year, probably shouldn't have been that way, shouldn't have had that feeling. So I like the idea and concept. I think if you could sell it to a TV network and one of the free-to-airs for a bit of scratch, or at least just get some brand, get in the prime time and get some branding on there, it's a much bigger success. However, I think the measure of all success in everything in the NBL is if the Ignite Cup can result in some joker with more cash than sporting business acumen, if it can result in them ponying up the dough for a future failed franchise on the Gold Coast, where the final was held, then the whole thing is a success. But without that eventuality, I'm less excited about the outcomes of the IGQ. IGQU. Ignite Cup. NBL 26 season recap. 3-point percentages were down. Blowouts were up. I'm noting this fact, but not giving reasons for it, other than I did think this year's crop of import guards and guards in, pardon me, and imports in general was not great. We saw a lot of imports come and go at Perth, at Southeast Melbourne, certainly at Brisbane. Who else made moves? Adelaide made moves. So a lot of big teams and little teams, you know, saw big time imports underperform. And I think that may have been the result for both the blowouts and the 3-point percentage. Hard to say. Viewership is up 20% of the NBL on ESPN, apparently. And I'm sure it is. Sadly, the NBL is still dealing in percentages rather than raw numbers. And that's always a sign of statistical and commercial vulnerability. Moving on, the NBL has a problem, and it's a good one, sort of. And this was kind of a thing I thought about all year. The AFL and the NBA, in particular the NBA, staying in the same genre of product. The NBA has a huge problem with tanking. Look no further than this season. There's about 8 teams all purposely trying to lose. That's a horrible situation. The NBL obviously doesn't have a draft and therefore doesn't have that problem, but yet it still seems like every year there are 3 or 4 teams that are dead spots on the schedule. And when you've got a soft cap, salary cap, that really shouldn't be the case. So tanking's easy to fix. Don't reward losing, remove the draft somehow. Harder question. But the NBL's got this problem of Brisbane always stink. At Illawarra go boom to bust. Can stink, and then and New Zealand are slowly skipping and going that way. It's a bit harsh for New Zealand, actually, but certainly those Brisbane stink and can stink, and Illawarra go boom bust. So already that's 30% of your teams that are just, you look at the TV and you go, oh, even if they're playing Bryce Cotton, you don't bother. Although even if they're playing Melbourne or Perth or Southeast Melbourne, you just don't bother. How do you fix it? Is the hard cap the fix, where you shrink, you make the top teams worse or the big spenders worse, your Melbourne, Perth and Sydney? I don't think that's any salve. If you have one, a fix for why those teams suck, I mean, can you do something where you have to impose a league-wide consensus over like these weird ownerships up in Brisbane? Don't know. If you've got a fix, hit me at Twitter, at NBL Pocket Pod. Another NBL 26 season recap. We saw the best NBL content emerge this year, and I think it's Boddy Nodge and Joey Wright on timeout, the no-flop zone. I think we all enjoyed that. I hope they do it again into next season. Moving on, championship odds. These are interesting. Sydney, $1.70. Absolute screaming favorite, and I think that's a pretty fair price. Adelaide, $4.50. Southeast Melbourne, $4.50, and then Perth, way out where, on $17. Would we all say that Adelaide and Southeast Melbourne each have an equal chance to win the championship? Are they just as good as each other? Are they just as good of a championship hope? I mean, I guess their road to the championship is the same. They each have to play each other, and then presumably Sydney. I may be giving away my tips by saying that, but I don't think I'm going off grid by saying that. Are we sure Adelaide? I'd probably have Southeast Melbourne a little bit higher, as in lower, more likely to win the championship than Adelaide. But we're going to talk about that some more. Semi-finals predictions and premonitions. We're at the 8.5 minute mark. We're doing great. Firstly, when we talk semi-finals in the NBL, firstly, tip of the cap to the NBL scheduling department. I like the upcoming Tuesday, Wednesday, and then 2 games on the Saturday format. I think that's great. You get a little bit of the midweek, and then your Saturdays, you know, you get an afternoon and an evening. I will watch more games as a result of that scheduling, so tip of the cap. And then games are dodging the AFL games somewhat. The Saturday's a bit tricky, but also filling those dud midweek TV nights. So will it draw crowds? Will there be crowds at a Tuesday, Wednesday game? I don't know. Probably not as much as a Wednesday, Friday, Sunday structure, which I think they do in the NBA with the finals. But nonetheless, for me personally, anecdotally, I enjoy this structure. Let's look at what I'm calling semi-final one, Adelaide against Southeast Melbourne. Adelaide are $1.79 to win the series. Southeast Melbourne are $1.98. These odds come courtesy of Sportsbet. Adelaide are $1.70 to win in game one, and Southeast Melbourne are $2.15. So, you know, is what it is. Let's look at the regular season record between the two. On January 31st, we're going in reverse, you know, most recent games back in time. January 31st, 77-97, Adelaide lose at home. January 18, 89-108, Adelaide lose at home. November 22nd, 81-94, Adelaide win on the road. And then October 16, 88-71, Adelaide win at home. So there you go. So Adelaide played three games at home and only won one of them, lost two, but then managed to go into Southeast Melbourne and win. I think Southeast Melbourne are going to win game one and this series. And it's always a hard prediction to say that when Adelaide clearly have the best player on the court in Bryce Cotton. But I just look at it and say to myself, Bryce Cotton has lost in two of his last semifinal appearances. And this Adelaide team is no better than the ones he lost with in Perth. The Doolittle, Jordan Usher, I want to say, the Michael Frazier, that team. I can't remember who else was on there. Oh, that Brody Manick. Wow. I just don't see this team. Oh, actually, who am I kidding? This team is better than those. Rakosevich alone is better than some of those. And Cheatham's okay. And what's his name? Flynn Cameron's having a great year. So they are better than that first semifinal team. But none of the supporting players playing with Cotton this year are even close to Christian Doolittle. And he was there last year in Perth and they still lost to, I mean, I must admit, I think it was the eventual champions. No, it was Melbourne. What can I say? I just think Southeast Melbourne are more disciplined and are better and have a few pieces that are really going to hurt Adelaide. I don't think the home court advantage is any help to Adelaide. As you can see, they lost twice at home. I'm looking for Southeast Melbourne to capitalize on and widen their already quite decent offensive rebounding percentage and lower turnover percentage. I think they're going to squeeze the ball. I don't think Adelaide are going to apply great defensive pressure. So Southeast Melbourne are going to get structurally to look at what they want at on offense. And then I think like a guy like John Brown is just so swift and agile in and under that a guy like Humphreys, Cheatham is powerful but doesn't have as good a nose for the ball as John Brown. So I'm going to say that's where they're at. Keeping Cotton off the line is also going to be a must for Southeast Melbourne. And I think Foxwell and Brown, for that reason, will be key to the series. Brown the third in particular. I think Josh King and co will be watching a lot of what Sydney did to Cotton back in November of 2025 when the Kings held Cotton to 7 points on 3 of 10. Conversely, on the other side, for the 36ers, call me crazy. Well, actually, don't call me Joe. But I don't trust Humphreys. I don't trust Cheatham. Isaac White, in the role and the minutes he's been getting from Wells, I don't trust him. And Matt Kenyon's minutes sometimes go up and down. It's hard to predict. Therefore, guys, I don't trust over a series against a team like Southeast Melbourne. And a coach like King, who I think is going to dagger guys, really headhunt matchups. And I certainly don't trust Wells. Their end of the year was pretty much as poor, for many of the teams in the top six, as poor as any in the top six, and not by a small margin. And he was erratic, going at players. He's very performative on the sidelines, where it looks like he's directing players, but no one's actually listening. They've checked out. And I think they're just looking to survive on talent. But against Southeast Melbourne and Sydney, you're going to need more than that. And that's why I have my pick. Before we go on to semi-final number two between Perth and Sydney, I want to take a quick little deflection, a quick little manoeuvre away and look at the play-in attendances. Someone put up something on Twitter about these numbers, and they come from ausstadium.com, so thank you to them. Southeast Melbourne versus Perth, attendance was 3.9K. Let's call that 4, down from the average of 8.3. Now, this website lumps John Cain Arena altogether, Melbourne and South East Melbourne, so it's hard to get a particular read on both teams, but nonetheless, 4,000 of that game. Melbourne versus Tasmania, again at John Cain Arena, so we know this is, you know, home game for Melbourne. Here we go. The average is 8.3. Melbourne probably get average a little bit higher than that. South East Melbourne probably half that. But there was only 5,000 people at that game. That was an elimination game. Melbourne United, big club, 5,000. It's kind of low. Then we go Perth v Melbourne in Perth over at RAC Arena. 6.7, down from the average of 10.4. Now that's straight up. That's Perth got to beat Melbourne to make the semifinals. That game meant everything. And their second half was as good a basketball as we've seen all year. It was terrific. 6.7K. 4,000 people, 3,500 people in Perth decided, you know what? If this team gets eliminated, we're happy not being there to see it. We're happy to just say our goodbyes to this NBL 26 Wildcat roster, you know, over the phone. You know, apparently, it was a very hot day in Perth, or evening in Perth that day. Tickets were a bit pricey. I think anywhere between the sort of 100 mark is for a good ticket was about what you're looking at. I think people just got jack of it. And it's really interesting, and I actually meant to do this before I came on the air, but just look at what were the biggest games this year. And I say this kind of really flying from the seat of my pants, so if I'm incorrect, I apologize. But if you go to ausstadiums.com, click on the NBL link, and then look at the top performers, all the best games are the ones involving Bryce Cotton. And I think we've seen with the NBL where, you know, people just want to see really good players and really good basketball. And, you know, Bryce Cotton is a guarantee of that. And some of the other teams aren't. They don't care about the team and necessarily. It's, and, you know, this Wildcat team has been, you know, okay. And no one's got particular hope that they're going to make it any further than this semi-final. So the 6.7K, I mean, also was it a matter of the game was on a Friday night? So, you know, conditions were kind of perfect to get a good crowd in, and it didn't happen. Anyway, the results were a reinforcement of the standings. This is the other thing about a wider conversation about the play-in. The results were a reinforcement of the standings. The teams that were lower didn't make it. Melbourne and Tasmania didn't make it. South East Melbourne and Perth were in the top four already, and now they are in the top four. Have fans lost interest in the play-in? Is it unnecessary? Is it overwrought? Is it a concept that's too hard to sell? Now, I can speak anecdotally. I really like the play-in. I think it's terrific. It gives other teams a chance. And normally, I mean, if Tasmania were at full health, they would have beaten Melbourne. They would have definitely jumped them. There's no doubt about it in my mind. So I see a huge value in the play-in. I think it's great. But is there a way they can change the marketing? Maybe the turnaround was too quick to then sell tickets. Could you do a package deal, or, you know, does your membership get you like a subscription? I just feel like that giving yourself a, what, two or, if you're the Wildcats, giving yourself a 2 or 3 day window to sell 10,000 tickets, that's, and when you're asking a decent price, that's too much in too little time. So a bit of a perfect storm there. So I don't know how you fix that. I don't work for this league or any of the clubs, so I don't give a fuck. you work it out, you know, you're getting a paycheck. Most of these people just sit around, I don't know what they do. Moving on to semi-final number 2, Sydney versus Perth. The Sydney Kings are $1.24 to win the series, while Perth are at $3.95. It's a big discrepancy. The rosters are not set yet, so we don't have odds for game 1 yet. They'll come out tomorrow. You can go on the Sportsbet app or likewise and check it out. I probably said Sportsbet too many times for a company that doesn't pay me any money to spruik their products. I actually think betting is a disgrace, especially in this country and the way it's advertised. If I can just get that out there. But I do like their mathematical look at the game, and you get a sense of, you know, what's likely and unlikely. Moving on, let's look at the previous matchups. If I'm right in saying, and maybe I've misread realgm.com, Perth have not defeated Sydney at all this year. February 15th, the score was 102-84. Sydney defeated Perth in Kudus Bank Arena in Sydney. December 12, 79-108, Sydney defeat Perth on the road. Davis had 38 points. Massive blowout. October 19, 94-72, Sydney defeat Perth again back in New South Wales at home. So the Wildcats have not won a game against the Kings since Bryce Cotton's departure, and I don't think this series will be any different. I think we're looking at a 2-0 sweep, and the Kings will be waiting upon Adelaide or Southeast Melbourne, but I like Southeast Melbourne making it over Adelaide over a series. I just think they're a little bit more reliable. And here's why I say that this thing's going to be... I'm going to think, is this going to be a bloodbath? Yeah, this is going to be a bloodbath. The Dellavedova ball pressure will kill the Kings alone. Will kill the Wildcats alone. And also his ball protection. There's just not going to be any careless plays like what Melbourne committed. There's just going to be ultimate protection of the ball. So the Wildcats aren't going to be able to progress the ball, and they're not going to be able to halt the Sydney Kings progressing the ball the other way. I just think the combination of size in Suarez and length Cooks on JLA is going to kill the Cats. I just think they're purpose made to bump that guy off position, and Cooks is there to rally around him. I like both those matchups for the Kings against Perth and JLA. I think that could be a disaster. The gap in routine, reliable productivity from the likes of Mulawach, Torrey Craig, Kwat Noi, and to a lesser extent, Galloway has been a little bit more inconsistent and not the volume of production. But even still, they, for their reliability of productivity, far exceed that of Windler, who's up and down like a yo-yo. Henshaw, you never know when he's going to throw a bounce pass out of bounds. And then Wagstaff, who's, you know, getting on, capable player and can give you some good minutes. But if you're looking for him to win your series, you're probably in a bit of bother. I'll say this, and here's the stat. Two of JLA's five lowest field goal percentage games have come against the Kings. 9 points on 27% the last time they met in what was an absolute shocker, where he and Suarez ran at it, and 12 points, 36% earlier in the year. And I don't see this, as I've said before, I don't see this series being any different. The only slight doubt I have is Doolittle. The Kings don't have a perfect matchup for him. Suarez big but too slow. Cooks fast but perhaps too slight. I'm actually just, as a fan, I'm just excited to sit back and see what they do against him. Is it going to be a bit of Torrey Craig? Is it going to be a bit of Cooks? Is it going to be, are they going to just throw a double at him and force him to kick it on? I'm really excited to see what Gorgon's got cooked up. I think any strategy is probably going to work. Doolittle shown game to game to struggle with when to pick his spots. Looked amazing in the second half against Melbourne, but the Sydney Kings are not the Melbourne United, not even close. And so Doolittle is one of the five best players in the NBL, but the drop-off in his supporting cast and certainly their reliability is too great. And I just don't know if there's many spots, other than Doolittle, any spot on the floor where the Kings don't trump the Cats. And for that reason, I think this one's gone 2-0. I don't think I answered the question about semi-final one. I think that one will go down to three games. I think Adelaide will pluck one away. You know, you'll see a massive game from Cotton where he'll be able to shake loose, but I like South in Melbourne. I think John Brown's going to be the player of that series. And for me, in this series, the player is going to be, probably going to be Davis. I don't really see who Perth has. They've got some nice length on him, but he can just shake guys off and get these mid-range jumpers. So, bloodbath. I can't put a lock on a bloodbath, but yeah, both these games could be won by the Kings by 20 points. Let's put NBL 26 and the semifinals to one side, or the rearview mirror, and let's have a look ahead to NBL 27 next season for the eliminated teams. And we're going to do this in reverse ladder order where they finished. With the 24-minute mark, this should take less than 10 minutes. So, here we go. What I've done is I've just gone, okay, a lot of these teams need an overhaul, a lot of changes. They need a lot. If you focus on everything, often you come away with nothing. So I'm going to try as best I can to isolate each team's major issue or issues and address that, and just bring up some nice little thought pieces for you at home to have a think, go, okay, they've got that player under contract and that player under contract. Would I not sign them? Things like that. because it's so hard to predict an NBL team's offseason because so much is about where a player is at injury-wise, where they're at personally and want to come to Australia, who's available, what's available, and when they're available is key. So I'm going to do my best. I can't do everything, but I'm going to try and do nothing. Brisbane Bullets, bottom place finishes. I'm going to go through the rotation players they have under contract, so we actually have something to build off of. So next season already, the Bullets have under contract Holt, Mitch Norton, amazingly, Harrison and McDaniel, but that's a mutual option. Casey Brather is out of contract. So I'm looking at the problem they have. Brisbane led the league in starting lineups, different starting lineup combinations. They need to address that. They need availability and consistency. And for that reason, I would not renew, or bring back either Prather or McDaniel. They're good players. They're capable, Prather in particular. But this team just needs to go, here is our eight. And they have shown good consistency, and they're not going to get hurt, touch wood. But let the wealthier clubs roll the dice on health. Not being healthy in the NBL kills you. And yes, you can't help guys getting hurt, but you can put yourself in the day-to-day swing of good luck and hire guys who are going to play all the games. John Brown III was always going to play every game this year. It was just obvious. He's just that guy. He's just that player. So don't go against the grain of injury, Brisbane Bullets. Don't do it again. Don't go for a Jalen Adams who's hurt when you sign him. Can't do that anymore. Let the wealthy clubs do that. The Brisbane Bullets need to focus on the little things. Forget the home run swings. Take the bunt for the single. Moving on to the Cairns Taipans, but staying in Queensland, another dud team. Rotation players under contract. Amazingly, they only have McVay under contract, and it's only a mutual. So he could decide to walk if he got an NBA offer, a Euro, and they would have no one on their books. They don't even have a coach on their books. Ford is also out of contract. Whew. It's a tough one for me to say, but I like Ford. But this snake-bitten matrimony needs to uncouple. And it's a respectful uncoupling, and it's he's had some success there. And I don't think he actually wanted to coach this year, but coerced back into it. It just needs to a firm shake of the hands, a good look in the eye. Thank you very much. But sometimes change for change's sake is actually a good thing. And I think he needs to go away, take a break, and come back with a bigger club. He's had to do a lot for the club. So bring in a coach who's going to mimic Sam Allardyce of the Premier League, if you know his teams. Less O from the outside, more D. You don't have to score as many points if you don't concede as many on the other end. Ford and his teams have always shot a lot of three-point shots. I think it's time to rein that in. But outside of that, I mean, they have no players under contract. I have nothing to say. Moving on to the Hawks. Rotation players under contract. Greta, Sam Froling, Hickey, Blanchfield, Peatling, Harvey, Swakala Bullock, and that's a team option, which you think they'd probably pick up. Their coach, Jason Tatum, is also under contract. Here's what I think. With Froling out, JaVale McGee became a need or a must. He's now, has now returned from injury, so no longer is that the case. Retool with new imports. Take the team option on Swakala Bullock and keep your owner away from the courtroom steps. A reminder, it's Larry Kesselman's league. Don't like it. Sell, don't sue. I think a lot of things didn't go the way of Illawarra this year in their schedule, in a bunch of different things. TV, media, speech, and a lot of that was you can't, as a club sitting an hour or two south of Sydney with a stadium and an attendance of 2,500 per game, sue the owner of the league and think you're going to get a good outcome. It was a disaster, and now you've got to reshape. But they just need a little bit more scoring on the wing. They just need to retool their imports. Harvey became a national or a PR or close to, so make that happen and go out and get some good imports. There's enough rotation players there that you can make something from. Blanchfield probably take a step back. Greta take a step forward. Peatling, Harvey, Swaka. There's something there. Moving on. Breakers. Rotation players under contract. Whew, listen to this. Tarangi, Liafa, and Jackson Cartwright. All right. One of those is good. Here's the problem they have. They sacked their coach. They couldn't wait to do that. Probably should have done it mid-season. They, the Breakers, New Zealand, lost to Brisbane three times, both home and away this season. for a team like the Breakers with their roster and the way Brisbane were going at the times that they met, that's inexcusable. The coach had to go and has. Thumbs up. Re-up on two of the three import slots and go again. You've got Jackson Carr. He is not Bryce Cotton, but him alone should win you around about 40 to 50% of your games. Meninga's going to be a tough re-sign. I think his value went through the roof, but I thought he was good. See what you can do. Jack Jumpers, rotation players under contract. Ben Eyre, that's a mutual. Bannon and Marshall. And Roth is also the coach under contract. Take that mutual option on Eyre and others, because they've got quite a few guys out of contract, like Majuk Deng and all those guys. Like, you probably bring them back for consistency. I'll say this. This is what the Jack Jumpers need to do, I think. Under Roth, they play the league's lowest pace. Okay, and with Roth as your coach under contract, that's not going to change. And nor really should it. Focus on players who get you and that team extra possessions. So offensive rebound specialists, rebounding in general was not a strong point for this team. They had a Magne out a lot. Offensive rebounds, rebound steals, and minimizing turnovers, which they did to a degree, but they also played a lot slower pace than a lot of teams, so it was natural that they were going to have less turnovers. But relative to their pace, their turnovers are a little bit higher. So you do those things, and I think this is a better team. Melbourne United, rotation players under contract. Delaney is a mutual. Krizlovic, Golding, Shea Illy, Bowen. Vickerman also returns. He's under contract. Melbourne United, work out who Chris Golding is to you. Not to his agent, not to the media rabble that make any excuse for him, pump his tires, sometimes criticize him, I think. Who is Chris Golding to you? Is he a starter or is he a bench player? This jumping between the two, you've committed too much cash to him not to know what he is. 5 wins, 6 losses as a bench player, 11 wins, 9 losses as a starter. Inconclusive number, inconclusive test spectrum. Moving on from, work out who he is. If he's a bench player, cool. Recruit over the top of him, bring in a gun. Milton Doyle was close, but bring in an absolute gun, two guard, off the bounce scorer, and sit Golding in the corner. If you think he's a starter, okay, look at imports that work around him. Work out who he is to you. Belaboring the point, Delaney, I don't think Delaney's the guy. Had a great game against Tasmania. If he's your starting power forward, you know, this is a league with Doolittle and John Brown and, to a lesser extent, Cheatham and bigs like JaVale McGee and Harrison. I just feel like if you've got Finn Delaney soaking up 25 to 30 NBL minutes, I think you kind of know where your team is trending, and I don't think it's to a championship. He's on a mutual. Probably have a good thing about that. I'd probably look somewhere else. Melbourne United. I've had a sample size is the word I was searching for before. We've had enough sample size on Shea Illy. He cannot stay healthy. Got to recruit over the top of him. Assemble your roster accordingly with that information. Guys, that is, I look forward to NBL 27 for the 6 teams that have been eliminated. I just want to now talk about free agency and open the mailbag, and we're out the door. We're at 33 minutes. Whew. Best available free agents going into next year so far. This is all teams, including the ones that are still alive. Dukas, Devers, Kyron Galloway, Wardenburg, Bolden, Bales, Tom Wilson, Krebs, Meninga, Max Darling, Magne, Drimmick, Deng, McDonald in Tasmania, Kenyon, Pepper, Aquera, Russo Nance, Gak, DJ Mitchell, Jordan Hunter and Nathan Sobey are on mutual options, so they may or may not be free agents, but I thought I'd mention them. Sean Bruce, Malawatch, and then Bull Quoll, Kwat Noi, and Lupepe of the Kings have team options. So again, they'll probably all three of them get picked up, you would think. Quoll maybe not. Don't know. Depends on his asking price. But yeah, so they're the best available local free agents. I don't want to talk about the imports. That you never know what's going to happen. The NBL imports, it's an absolute lolly scramble. So for me, the top 10 local NBL free agents coming into the next year are Wardenburg, definitely, in no particular order. Wardenburg, Krebs, Meninga, Magne, Ding, Pepper, Aquera, and then if they're on it, Hunter and Sobey, and then Mullerwatch. And if I had a top three, if I was a team that had a lot of money to spend, the top are Meninga, Wardenburg, Magne. I've got way more than three. Sorry, top five. Meninga, Wardenburg, Magne. Probably not quite in that order. I'd go Meninga number one, Magne number two, Wardenburg, and then your wings, Mullerwatch, who I really admire, and then Pepper slash Krebs. I think they're a very similar player. I think they, depending upon the coach, I'd probably go Pepper. I think he's a bit younger, bit bigger body, has shown to be a bit of a bit decent. Krebs had a decent year. If you're looking at that and you're looking to totally rebuild your roster, I mean, they are slim local free agent pickings. You know, and you got to think, like, a guy like Owen Foxwell departs the NBL for college, and then Japan and China, and oh man, like, there's a lot of Australian players who are not playing in the NBL and who aren't in the NBA. Yeah, it's getting a bit dire. Anyway, we won't belabor that point, but that's what teams are kicking around with. That's who's on the board. Do any of those players, if you sign them, do you just rub your hands together going, all right, cool, we've shored up, you know, our position. You know, one of these guys, we've shored up that position for a decade. Meninga, maybe. Magne, great player, hurt too often. Mullerwatch, he's made a huge jump. Does he plateau? Whew, tough build. All right, we're at the 36-minute mark. Let's get out of here. Let's open the mailbag. Hang on, I'll just get the bag here. Opening up the mailbag. Yep, there's no mail. Goodbye, everybody. See you later, and I will speak again before the grand final series. Bye.